Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Chaz Onkay, aka Keith. He's a somewhat private citizen journalist that's been keeping track of the Celsius mining and Celsius Chapter 11 case for about 2 years now. We talk with him about not only the beginning of the Chapter 11 case, but how it's proceeded over the last 2 years and what creditors can expect from the new Celsius mining entity, Ionic. Great conversation with Keith, and thank you to Keith for keeping track of all the data over the last 2 years and being willing and able to speak about it on today's podcast. This is a data heavy show, so I would push people to go watch on YouTube if you can, as Keith does share with us a few of his data entries and charts on Excel. Okay, before we jump to the show, we'd like to thank Forman Mining for making this show possible. You'll hear from Forman Mining a little bit later in the episode. We'd also like to push people to go check out our newsletter, blockspace.media. We have some great new content twice per week there. Go check out blockspace.media. Okay, on to the show.
Want to mine Bitcoin? Gator Mining offers premium hosting with as low as one unit per client, 95% uptime guaranteed, no curtailment, 24/7 monitoring and maintenance, in-house certified repair center, clean and renewable energy, all at competitive market rates. Work with an individualized team to get hash rate flowing your way today. Gator Mining, pioneering trustworthy crypto hosting for optimal mining success. Contact Gator Mining today at gatormining.ca.
Bitcoin miners, be prepared. Hash rate is moving upstream towards power plants and low-value energy. Don't get cut off. Modernize and mobilize your Bitcoin mining fleet today with Upstream Data's high-performance load centers. Plug in Upstream Data's hash hut and monetize surplus wind power reliably in the blistering heat of West Texas. Plumb in hash generators and safely convert natural gas into cash in the frigid winters of northern Canada. Upstream offers high-quality load centers that will help you mine Bitcoin safely and reliably in every application and climate. Mobilize today and start mining Upstream at upstreamdata.com.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. We have a great episode today with Keith, aka Chaz Onkay, or Key.
Yep.
How do you pronounce it?
Chaz Onkay.
Yeah. Chaz Onkay. Perfect.
Yep.
I describe you as a citizen journalist. You've mostly been known for your Twitter account and your following of what's been happening with Celsius and with the Celsius mining extension through US Bitcoin and Hut 8 now. First of all, welcome to the show, and we're excited to dig in with you all this information.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on the podcast today.
Cool. So we'll start off with a little bit of background. Again, like, I sort of see you as a citizen journalist, became aware of your work a little bit ago and just kind of followed through. You've definitely been like doing your due diligence in terms of like looking at all the public information from the Celsius Chapter 11 and the follow through with the purchase of Celsius through the Fahrenheit entity and then over time into US Bitcoin. So there's also a lot of names in here, by the way. So if you're an audience listener, like, we're probably going to trip up on this a little bit, but there's a lot of the same entities. There's really only three or four, but I think they've all managed to change names like a few times during this whole deal. So bear with us.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a laundry list of current, prior kind of connected parties.
It's really annoying for one.
It's a web.
Crazy. It makes you question like what's actually going on in this situation, right? If everyone's changing names all the time.
Yeah. It leads to a very complex situation to follow, especially for your folks that are not savvy on business. You know, they're more of your crypto kind of retirees, so to speak. You know, like, they got on the bandwagon, were like, hey, this would be a great opportunity to join Celsius. They have good yield and they say they're safer than a bank. So, I mean, you have a lot of folks that might not come from the background that the lawyers and the managers and stuff like that are coming from, that are just constantly changing things.
And Chapter 11s are just difficult in the first place, right? Like, how does an entity get unwound? I mean, still have Mt. Gox going on. There's the FTX one right now. It's been going on for a little bit. But before we dive into that, let's get a little background on yourself, and then let's go through what happened with Celsius, what the company was, what occurred, why it went under, and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background, so I was in the U.S. Army for about a decade. I was a logistician. I handled logistics. That's where a lot of my like understanding of like accounting, finance, you know, budget management originated from. You know, we had small operations. So, I mean, I had to take on a lot of shoes and a lot of, you know, tasks for myself. After I got out, I went to what was called, I guess, a regional national logistics company, and basically handled their, basically their warehouse was 350,000 square feet. And I joined the team when it was just a bunch of steel girders. So it was a shell. If anyone knows of the Cedarville site for Celsius, it basically looked like that, but bigger. And basically helped them set up from inception till first delivery of their entire logistics chain. So that was pretty exciting. That was one of my bigger projects. After that, I went, finished up my bachelor's degree. I got working towards my master's here, hopefully in the next year or so. But my background's primarily business management, logistics, finance, accounting, and obviously a lot of analytical work. So that's, in a nutshell, my background.
And how did you come to care about the Celsius case? From us talking beforehand, like, you weren't involved with Celsius. You just kind of saw it. You saw the Chapter 11 case, and then you like sort of took an analytical interest in it. But to my understanding, you don't have any assets that are tied up in this Chapter 11, nor do you have like any crypto assets that are kind of tied up in anything.
I have zero crypto assets to my name. I've made it pretty clear since the beginning days that most of my investing and portfolio primarily consists of medical research and stocks like that. So people who do, you know, the research and then they publish it and then hopefully, you know, their company can put out a product is primarily what I'm focused on. My wife is into intellectual property law. She's an attorney. So she's more of the bioscience side. So we get, you know, that nice combination of I bring the business understanding, the financial side of the business, and she brings the science to be able to look through things and be like, hey, this business looks this looks potentially good. So we kind of bring a good knack to that. But in terms of how I got involved, I was pretty much, I started catching wind of this, what was that, July, August of 2022. And I was seeing a lot of like the short squeeze kind of coming onto my feed because I do a lot of like just finance Twitter and stuff like that. I was looking at, I'm like, this looks like a scam. This looks fraudulent in terms of the short squeeze. And like, I was very vocal against them. Like, hey, y'all are doing some sketchy shit to people. Like, and got one of the ad hoc groups, one of the guys that were running the ad hoc groups for the case was like, hey, would you be willing to check out our group's financials? Like what people, because they posted like this big, like 16.
And this is for Celsius, right? You're speaking.
Correct.
And Celsius token sell.
Yeah, I was. Okay. Yeah. So the short squeeze for the sell short squeeze. So the Celsius flywheel token, you know. And so I was very vocal against that. And then, as I was saying, there was a ad hoc group that approached me being like, hey, they posted up our, you know, a docket of 16,700 something pages of PDF 4-point font document with everyone's information. I mean, it was names, redacted addresses, their entire crypto holdings, everything was in there. And it was just a mess. And they're like, can you help us? And so that's really what kind of got me involved, because like, I probably spent 2 weeks not working on it full time, of course, but like I spent about 2 weeks creating custom PowerShells, scrubbing the data, putting pieces together, because I mean, it was bad. What was provided by Celsius to the court was there was a lot of commingling of accounts on that. There was crypto that they basically didn't. Everything had different formats, right? So like, for example, like if someone had like Bitcoin, Ethereum, ACH, or whatever other crypto, they would put those into a long string on that person's account. And like, sometimes there'd be a comma, sometimes there'd be a space, sometimes there'd be a semicolon. And like, it was just so messy that like, if you just
account management, that's frustrating to hear, but not unexpected based on what we know about Celsius at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, we ended up finding out like 6 months later that, I mean, they use Google Sheets to manage all their accounts. I mean, so like, I can't, It was literally, however, it appeared that whoever was inputting the data, just there was no actual system in place. It was just whatever they put in at the time. And so I mean, like, I had to do a lot of about 2 weeks of legitimate work to scrub this. And at that point, I was pretty much time invested. And it's just worked from there. You know, I started scrubbing into more of the bankruptcy financials, the business plans, you know, what was being advised to the creditors, which was poorly represented. And I was like, hey, I have a background in business management. I have an analytical experience. Like, let me look at this, because I mean, I've been through businesses that have not exactly been through Chapter 11, but they've been through, you know, mergers, acquisitions, you know, worked with contract negotiations. So I mean, I have a fairly wide breadth of experience. And I was like, well, let's see what I can dig out and then try to put it into a format that is easy for people to understand that don't have this background. And I feel like I've done a good job of that. I've tried breaking things into nice graphs. I get called the Excel guy a lot.
Let's go. The highest of compliments I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't take that ill will, but you know, I think it allowed creditors to actually get an understanding now for what, almost 20 months now. You know, I've been able to take a 600-page document and boil it down into, you know, 30 cells on an Excel sheet to kind of really consolidate it and then be like, hey, so this is what's happening here. This is what I'm seeing, you know, slowly working it down.
And let's go back to the Celsius case, right? So like itself, Celsius was basically a yield farm mechanism. There was like a centralized component, decentralized component. At the end of the day, there was a lot of elements of a Ponzi scheme within it, and it collapsed. The Celsius token that you mentioned had this really odd, for lack of a better word, probably just call like criminal token cell.
Yeah.
That, you know, it didn't really have a utility or a purpose besides like being shoved in there. And the Celsius people used it for its purposes. And, you know, now they're going to through the criminal proceedings at the moment. But the other element that's interesting for our listeners, and we'll get to this later in the show, is the mining aspect that also fed into the yield generation here, where, you know, it wasn't just the token. It wasn't just ETH staking or other token staking. They had a legitimate mining business with, like, I think around 80,000 plus mining units. Now, was it run very well? Which we will get into.
For the audio listeners, I'm using air quotes when I say legitimate mining business.
Well, that's why we're having you on, Keith. That's what we got to get into. I mean, on paper, at 80,000 plus ASICs, they had sites, they had co-ops to run these through legitimate providers like Core Scientific, but we'll get into that into it in a minute. I want to keep going back on this, like, what got you interested in it and what was like the next step past that? So like you started paying attention to this, you ran the PowerShells, you got the details down to like 30 lines so people could understand.
Yeah.
Why did you keep going and follow along with this? And what did you become within like this mini community of Celsius creditors?
So I guess the way that I've always tried to explain it to, I guess I would say my critics, to be kind, is if you go to see people that are doing volunteering at a homeless shelter, or the lawyers that do the pro bono work, you know, no fees incurred at these, you know, big law firms and stuff like that, where they take on free clients, or your missionaries that are going overseas, like, they tend to do that because of passion, not because of any other incentive that they're getting. And after working closely with the ad hoc groups, and just getting I spent weeks really kind of digging into their things and just seeing the absolute financial turmoil that these people were in. I mean, we found folks that, I mean, they had their entire house. They sold a house and put it into Celsius before it collapsed. I mean, we had people lose their homes.
That's
literally
awful.
You know, as somebody who's in a position that I'm blessed, you know, I grew up, you know, my family wasn't well off, you know, but we got by. But as seeing people who's put their entire lives into this program and then getting destroyed, I mean, like, I look as like, who couldn't have a little bit of compassion and want to help these people? Like, I don't spend an inordinate amount of time on this, so to speak. Like, people go, oh, you tweet all the time. I'm like, yeah, but you know, everyone Everyone has a phone. Like, it takes no time for me to quickly, you know, look at a tweet and reply. You know, I work in a field where I have at least 3 monitors on at all times. So, I mean, having Twitter up on a side screen takes no energy to look at. And so a lot of what I do is stuff that can be done in 10, 15 minutes of work anyways. And after 18 months, I mean, I have reams of data that I can pull from. I have all the documents already converted into Excel files, and, you know, I have them in templates that I can easily cross-reference. So, I mean, like, these days, I mean, it's really not a challenge for me, so to speak, to, or I guess a big time investment. But to go back to your endpoint, the reason why I continue to stay involved is because I think that creditors deserve better than what they've been getting. They've been run around far too much. They've been provided with dirty data, is a good way, I guess, to explain it. And they just deserve to know what is actually happening, especially now that they're basically force investors into a startup, and statistically startups fail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they deserve to know what's happening.
Definitely. Okay. Appreciate you giving the background on that part. Let's go and talk about the proceedings of the Chapter 11 over the last year. So they went to Chapter 11, I believe it was like end of 2022, same time that I think everything was happening with FTX.
I think it was June or July.
Okay. So halfway through the 15th year.
15th or 16th, yeah.
They started going through that. Okay. Okay. And they started going through all the proceedings there. There's the bidding process. There's a few entities that popped up. Tell me a little bit about that. And then tell me how we got to the Fahrenheit deal. And then we'll stop there and go through what happened with the Fahrenheit deal, which itself also went through like sort of like a split.
Yeah. So I'll try to talk to the best of my knowledge on this. Primarily, my focus has been on more of the financial side. So how's mining been working? What's looking reasonable on the business side? So I haven't, there's some areas where like I'm knowledgeable, and then, so pardon if I'm more vague in some topics here, but the bidding happened. It was the first bid session didn't go great from my understanding. Obviously I wasn't involved, and, you know, I don't have any of that attorney privilege to see any of that. But from my understanding was basically it was like a dozen or so potential bidders, and like none of them initially were really that great, but Nova Wolf ended up winning, which is basically the subsidiary of Beowulf, which is another, they do kind of the same thing, but they do more of like the infrastructure building and stuff, and where Nova Wolf was their Bitcoin mining side. I believe Tiffany Fong put out a leak of all the bids that she received. And it basically put like, nobody really wanted to touch mining. There was basically bids for the assets. There was bids for the crypto. There was bids for the, like, the business. But everyone basically universally was like, Sell is not going to come in, the token. We don't want anything to do with that. And mining was out of the picture for basically all of them. I mean, even
was that because it was a bad time in the mining markets, or because that's eventually what basically was broken up was the mining entity, and then the rest of the crypto was sold. So that's interesting.
I think at the time, I mean, this was what, late 2022, early 2023.
Yeah, definitely the bear market. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were deep into that, but I mean, we were already seeing at that point that Bitcoin was coming back out. The margins were getting a little bit better, not great, but they were getting better. But I found it was very interesting that the debtor at the time was promoting, you know, mining still back then as like the future. But then you have big companies like Binance with billions of just liquid capital being like, nah, we don't even want to touch it. So, I mean, it kind of put into context of like the mining might not be in the best state. And that was something I had been advocating for, that, you know, their metrics, even going back to 2022, you know, were not great. I mean, they were, you know, earning revenue, you know, I'm sorry, I'm looking at my tables on the side, so if anyone's wondering why I'm looking to the side, so pardon all my extra calculations on the far side over here. I do a lot of napkin style math too when I'm looking at different things. But we can see, even going back to July, right down here, they were only generating like 2.7 million in revenue for an expense of 9.3 million of direct expenses. And it really wasn't getting better. October, they had a decent month, you know, 13 million, but then it basically dips right back down. And this November through like February, I believe, was the time period of when they were working through that bid process. That was when like different parties were coming through. It's also when they lost the Core Scientific deal.
So this is November 22 through February 23.
Yeah. Okay. And you can see a big point there is like, so in December, they had 65,000 rigs on this column here that were hashing. And then they immediately plummet to 28,000 rigs in January. And that is when they, from December to January, they basically blew up, they as in Celsius Management, blew up the Core Scientific deal. And that was basically down to they didn't want to pay the pass-through expenses. And they were held up on the term tariffs, which was in the contract. The way that I understand that transpired is Core, basically, the energy expenses through 2022 were going up. Everyone knows, anyone who's been following Bitcoin mining knows that energy expenses had skyrocketed. And the energy providers and the hosting providers were having to do more pass-throughs. Celsius Management didn't like that. And they pushed hard back. What was frustrating is, at the time, even then, you know, it was a couple million dollars per month in pass-through, maybe. A couple million, I think it was only like 2 cents additional per kilowatt hour of pass-through. So, I mean, like, not great, but like, in the scheme of, if you believe that Bitcoin was pumping, 2 cents per kilowatt hour is not the end of the world if you expect Bitcoin to hit 40, 50, 60,000. And I did the math the other day, and they basically gave up over $140 million in potential Bitcoin mining by cutting out the Core Scientific deal and the Mawson deals.
Sheesh.
It for potentially $10, $15 million in additional expenses. So, I mean, like, they lost net of upwards of $125, $130 million.
Dang. So that revenue would be like $140, $150. And then what was the cost before getting that additional surcharge, do you know?
We had all their different contracts of their energy rates. So we had their Easy Blockchain rates, we had their Luna Mawson rates, we had their Constellation energy provider, and Mothership was their primary energy sources.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually broke down all of their bills into their different, you know, different fee ranges. So everything from, you know, kilowatt weight, OPEX rates, hosting fees, infrastructure costs, operating margin fees, you know, taxes.
Yeah.
Basically, I tried to go through all of their bills and basically categorize them by their line items. And it ended up turning out their true cost of kilowatt was about 10 cents per kilowatt. Ooh,
that's tough.
Yep.
That's not good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was rough. I mean, so their Easy Blockchain rate was about 13 cents. Their Luna Mawson rate was about 11 cents. And then their Constellation rate was about 8 cents, which the Constellation should primarily be like their Styles, East Styles, self-hosted locations.
Gotcha.
And so a blended mix of basically 10 cents per kilowatt hour, which was rough. Which means any pass-through expenses, it would have put their pass-through expense for like their primary cell phone sites up to about 10 cents. So they would have been probably about 11 cents or so mixed average.
Okay. Yeah. The follow-up question there was just to point out that they were probably mining in the red no matter what at that point, because at that rate, you can't really mine profitably, especially when it was, you know, 30K or less Bitcoin at the time. So
there was no chance that they were mining profitably. And that was,
yeah.
That was something that both irritated some of the community when I was discussing it, and others, because like what I was doing back 2022, early 2023, was a lot of that was focused on month over month comparisons. So where are we at this month? What's it looking like? What's our trajectory for mining looking like? And so obviously I was reporting a lot of red because, I mean, you're in the hole, you know, $8 to $12 million a month. I mean, like, that's not good. You can't run that.
Yeah. And the tough part about that is you still have like these depreciating assets, right? And you have these contracts and sometimes there's charges for not fulfilling the contracts. And sometimes you have to get the assets out of those hosting facilities if you're not taking the energy. And so you have to go find a place to deposit these ASICs. So it can be quite the headache if you don't have the energy secured correctly. Let's go to the next part of the deal. So my understanding is that it was Nova Wolf. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm saying that incorrectly. And yeah, Nova Wolf, and then there was also Fahrenheit came in at the same time, and there might have been the Binance was in this at some point, but essentially Fahrenheit ended up winning the deal. It was a collaboration of multiple people.
Well, so Nova Wolf won the first bid cycle, so they won the first bid, and then parties got together and was like, hey, let's do a stalking horse, let's see if we can make these terms a little bit better, you know. Let's see if we can add value. And so there became a stalking horse bid. And so basically that was bid round two, because basically it was after Tiffany Fong leaked those things, it became quite evident that in some people's eyes, better bids for creditors were overlooked in favor of a bid that was better for the company, if that makes sense. So Binance, from my understanding, the way I looked at it, offered a far better cash incentive to creditors and to victims, but they didn't offer anything for the business. So they went with, you know, somebody that was going to offer, you know, potential recovery for creditors at a certain percent. That was not great at the time. I think it was like sub 30%, but it allowed the mining business and the business itself to move forward, to go forward. So they did a stalking horse bid. That ended up then winning it for the Fahrenheit conglomeration, corporations, however you want to refer to them. And then they basically got the win bid with the partner of USBTC. So that's kind of when like USBTC and Fahrenheit came into play, was mid 2023. I think it was like April, May, off the top of my head, somewhere around that time.
Hey listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Foreman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Foreman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Foreman, you get a system that scales with your business, inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Foreman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Foreman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit foreman.mn. With Foreman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Okay. And yeah, we've had US Bitcoin on the show a few times. Ashford Gnoon, he's been on at least two times, sort of detailing this. And then also, of course, US Bitcoin went through the merger with Hut 8 at the same time. And then previously to all this, US Bitcoin had picked up a lot of the Compute North assets that had, you know, gone to Chapter 11 as well. We'll get back to some of that Compute North US Bitcoin information in this case, actually, probably towards the end of the show, because we have some new info around that. But
yeah,
basically, yeah, and we both are laughing about that before the show. Basically, the next part here was that the Fahrenheit group kind of broke up a little bit. It seems like around September, something happened. I never really quite understood what happened, but basically, US Bitcoin got the mining operation. I'll allow you to go through it all.
I don't. There's a lot of speculation. I'll try not to speculate. I'll try to keep it focused on facts that we know to the best of my knowledge. But without speculating, there was issues, and those issues came to a head with Fahrenheit when the SEC denied a lot of the business. So they had basically a four prong of the lending, they had mining, they had staking, and then they basically, like, the general business was still going to be in play. And the SEC was like, nah, you ain't doing any of that because you don't got financials that are clean enough to run that. They're like, you can do mining because mining has been basically its own subsidiary. And basically, once it got its initial funding from creditors, it's more or less floated.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on top of that, we had the Kraken, the Coinbase, and the Binance hits by the SEC. Like, yep. Boom, 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 all during 2023. I don't know which dates those all came out, but almost all of them incorporated some sort of staking element where the SEC doesn't like staking. They don't like the fact that these exchanges are operating staking. And so no. When I first saw this happening with Fahrenheit, I was actually a little bit surprised that they would move forward with it, because the precedent had already been set that they were probably going to be walking into some sort of lawsuit with the SEC. But even before that, the SEC had to approve the Chapter 11 process and had to prove all this. So that was surprising to me. And it seems like that broke up whatever agreement had been made with the Fahrenheit creditors and the Fahrenheit group. And we moved into a new situation there where the assets for Fahrenheit were going to be sold off or liquidated. Some would be returned crypto and some would be, you know, return on PayPal via fiat. And then the mining elements would just go to US Bitcoin that would manage all of its mining operations.
Yep.
At the same time, Hut 8 and US Bitcoin merged at the time. So now Hut 8 is banned to all those things. So again, top of the show, we said there's a lot of names involved here, so it gets tricky. But
yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong on anything there. And then like, tell me about like that process from like September onwards. How did the community react to some of these changes? Were they frustrated by them? Were they okay with it? Did they see it as in their best interest?
So the community was definitely not excited. I don't think they had really been... The community's basically been kind of run around for 2 years at this point. I mean, like, they've not been given really clear insight on what the process has been going on. They've not been given good financial records. They've not been given good, like, hey, this is what we're working on. So, I mean, like, when they seen the four pillars of the reorg, a lot of the community was like, a lot of this doesn't seem like it's even going to be feasible. I mean, like, I remember back in like, I think it was like February or March when it first posted, within like 30 minutes, I was like, the staking's never going to happen. The SEC has been slaughtering every business that's attempting to stake right now in America. And I'm like, that's just good luck, but it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate there, but it just seems odd that that was included in the proposal. Tell me about
Go ahead. The staking was the only profitable side of the business at the time. So, I mean, they wanted to make... This is off the top math, but I remember vaguely that I think it was like something like $30 million a month.
Okay.
That they were actually netting on pure staking, where at the time, like, mining was losing half of that a month. So I wasn't surprised they wanted to go for it, because like, it was actually profitable at, you know, something like 800 million Ethereum being staked at the time, and they were just making what, 3%, 4% or something like that. So I mean, like,
$800 million worth
of... they had about $800 million worth at the time, and like, it was even at like a couple percent, it was making substantial amount of just net revenue just by just sitting there. Wasn't surprising.
So for the community aspect here, what does it mean to be a part of the community, and how do we define that? Because when I look at the numbers for who voted for things to go through, it does look like it was a pretty high percentage. I don't remember the percentage off the top of my head, but like, these things have to go through, you know, the courts, the judge has to agree on it, but then also the community has to vote on it, to my understanding, and like, agree with whatever is moving forward. So how do you define that, and explain it to me a little bit?
So I'm going to kind of ruffle feathers in terms of normal business aspects, but I always viewed that vote as an appearance of choice, not an actual choice for a lot of creditors. Anyone who had a clawback exposure, if they didn't vote for the plan, they'd be liable for that amount. So, I mean, you have folks right off the bat that are like, I'm only going to get 35% at the time, and I have an exposure that's going to just chew that away. So I'm going to get zero. What's the point? Why have I even been here for? And so a lot of folks that were in convenience class, were in, you know, different classes that were high risk. I think it was like 100,000 exposure or below. If you agreed to the plan, they would basically be like, okay, you don't owe us anything. And so a lot of a lot of the vote, especially in all of Chapter 11 cases that you look through, the Voyager case, if you go through any others, like a lot of times it's not really a choice. It's just which is the better choice, potentially. And I don't think a lot of creditors, the burnout at the time was bad. Creditors were just desperate. Like, they were basically pushing that this was going to end in 2023 if we voted, or not if we, as in myself, but as creditors, if they voted for the plan, they were shooting for December 31st, 2023. You guys get your money back. And so I think that as a group of creditors have been suffering for years at that point, like, they just want it to be done. And it provided them the most liquid crypto that they could get at the time. It provided them protections for clawbacks if they were under 100,000. It provided a more incentive for convenience class, and general earn classes got better incentives. And so, I mean, like, there was a lot of pros, but then at the same time, the big con was, you're going to be in a mining business now. That you've already, through Alex Musinski, spent $800 million of your Bitcoin on, that then we got liquidated. And so that money is poofed, gone. There's part of your hole right there. Sorry, anyone who's not followed, there's a multi-billion dollar hole in the Celsius account balances. So $800 million of their initial investment was already gone. And so by the time that this case is going to end, the Celsius community is going to already spend over $1 billion. I think it's about $1.2 billion.
That is insane.
On this mining business that today doesn't even have 7 exahashes worth of capacity online right now.
That is so bad. So it's over $1 billion to not even get 7 exahash. That's frightening.
Yeah. And it's bad because, I mean, they spent $800 million up front for their initial sites. Styles. Yeah. Let me pull up my lovely list. So they spent basically $800 million to buy 127,000 rigs at the time for their Garden City, Rebel, Styles, and East Styles facilities. And those facilities, respectively, were only 12 kilowatts, 25 kilowatts, 20 kilowatts, and 30 kilowatts. Not exactly, you know, 87 megawatts combined. What was alarming was they bought 120 plus thousand ASICs back in 2021. And they only bought enough facility infrastructure and started construction on enough facility infrastructure for 26,700, 800, give or take. And so, I mean, you had a delta of, you know, nearly 100,000 that just didn't have a home. And, like, they didn't have good contracts. You know, as we found out from Core, you know, Core only gave them, you know, I think like 40,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Mawson was like 20,000. So, I mean, like, they still had a gaping hole of, we have rigs, we don't have a place to put them.
And on top of that, they purchased at the top. They purchased infrastructure at the top. They didn't have home. A classic mining story. Now, I'm just kind of thinking right now, it'd be interesting to line up the BlockFi mining situation, Celsius mining situation, and maybe a few of the other, like, PubCo miners out there, and see how, like, their Chapter 11s proceeded from a mining angle. It does become very hard to mine when you're in Chapter 11 because you have to go through the court proceedings to make decisions. There's so many managers on hands, and during a mining market, you have to make decisions quickly.
Well, what's crazy, right, is the court early on in the case gave basically a free pass. They gave them the authorization to conduct business as normal throughout Chapter 11. So because Chapter 11 is a reorganization, you still need to run the business.
Yeah.
And the only parts that were really frozen was the crypto lending and, like, the custodian side of things. So, like, you know, the Celsius mining was still basically allowed full reign to do what they needed to do.
Just wasn't operating correctly. Yeah.
Correct. I mean, they were still amending contracts. They were changing energy providers. They were working to get new hosting agreements. I mean, they were working.
Yeah.
But yeah. A lot of the principles of business just weren't being followed, in my perspective.
Let's move over and talk about what happened after the bidding process went through and US Bitcoin got the bid for all the Celsius mining assets in terms of managing them, and they had the management contract. So let's define what that management contract entailed. And then let's talk about the merger with Hut 8, which I think we can probably spend the remaining time in the episode about, because that's a pretty big deal that all these Celsius creditors are now kind of lumped into Hut 8 and that merger. But we'll start with the US Bitcoin part. Like, what are they getting out of this in terms of like managing this fleet?
Yeah, so basically what they're managing is the existing infrastructure for Celsius, which I won't go, if you want me to go through those names again, I can. But they're managing the existing sites and the new site, Cedarvale, Texas. So they're going to get that. And I think that pushes them, if you go off the energy contract for Cedarvale, will push them over the 300 megawatts of total energy capacity. The problem with that is there's, for Cedarvale specifically, is there's environmental studies that need to be conducted per the state's requirement that is going to limit their capacity for probably a while. The state on Core Scientific's filings even put out who Core Scientific sold Celsius, the Cedarvale facility. That facility was marked as non-feasible and non-viable by Core themselves, and they shut it down in 2022. It's going to take at least a year to build the initial 100 megawatts of capacity, and then anything over 100 megawatts is probably going to require that study to be finished, and it's going to be at least 12 to 24 months before that is fully operational. And that's about 300 megawatts of contractual capacity. They don't have the infrastructure for it, though. So, I mean, that needs to be a big caveat. Like, you have it on paper that you can have 300 megawatts, but the state, on the other hand, goes, we don't have the infrastructure at a state level to provide you with that capacity right now.
And there's no buildings, there's no substations, there's no transformers. It's just, like, the access to 300 megawatts is what they're claiming.
So, yeah, so they have 20 megawatts, as far as I'm aware right now, of actual infrastructure. And they can get up to 100, I believe, on that infrastructure with some, they need to get a new liquid transformers, I believe is what Core decided to take with them when they took their toys, which was 240 megawatts of transformer.
Yikes. Big boy.
So they don't have that. They have about 20 megawatts right now. And I believe just regional capacity was only about like 100, 150. Yeah. So that's going to be rough. The problem for them too is also going to be the Cedarvale site is some I-beams and a roof, and it doesn't even have walls on most of the facility. Core was intelligent. They build their facilities on a template, and so that template means everything that's in this facility can go to that facility. And so they basically took everything, including breaker boxes, out of the walls and took them with them when they sold it to Celsius.
Was that the agreement with Celsius to be able to do that?
Yep. They had a nice long list of items to be excluded from the sale, and that included basically everything down to like breaker boxes and the 240 kilo or megawatt liquid transformer.
Wow. I've been to one of Core's facilities, and yeah, you're right. They do like this cathedral style. They're pretty cool.
Yep. It's smart. I mean, like, I know they're in the Chapter 11, or they just exited the Chapter 11.
Yeah.
But if you want to build a big mining operation, modularity is probably the smart way to play, because if one facility, for instance, you know, energy grid costs far more, you know, than you were projecting at one point, you could just basically just take your stuff and just move it to another facility.
Yeah.
And it plugs and plays. So, I mean, they were smart. I mean, I'll give them credit for that. But yeah, so I mean, they're, to go back to your question, they're going to be handling all of those sites. Also caveats into the fact that part of that agreement was Celsius was going to receive 20,000 hosting slots at USBTC's Site Delta. And Marathon now owns Site Delta and told USBTC and Hut 8, your contract's over in April. Bye bye. Yeah. And I'm just like, so those slots are gone.
let's talk about the Hut 8 deal first so we can give context for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So basically Hut 8 and US Bitcoin had announced about a year ago this time, maybe even a little sooner or earlier, that they had intended to merge. Merger of equals is what they stated. Hut 8 was bringing to the table a ton of Bitcoin mining operations and some HPC stuff in Canada. I think they were looking for their next move to get, you know, past that 2 to 3 exahash mark. And then yep. US Bitcoin had gone through all of like 2020, 2021, sort of scooping up assets from Chapter 11 cases, most notably Compute North, where they picked up management contracts and the rights to this energy for Kearney, Nebraska, a site there. And yep. then also two sites, I believe, in Texas. And so they got all that, seemed like a good deal, perhaps, where, you know, US Bitcoin is bringing energy and hosting management contracts to the table. Hut 8 is bringing Bitcoin and pre-experience on running operations to the table. Seemed like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Going into the winter, though, people started looking at this and being like, oh, we don't really like that US Bitcoin is involved on this side and Hut 8 has this thing. So there's like a lot of grumbling around it. I don't want to get too far into speculation here. I want to hand it over to you. Tell me about how this was perceived in the Celsius community, or the very least the people that you see in the Celsius community.
So I mean, it started off rocky to begin with. So when the Hut 8 USBTC merger was basically announced, media and other sources, basically the way it was perceived was that Hut 8 is basically, through this USBTC merger, buying, air quotes again for the listeners, Celsius assets. And that was a big misconception going around on the media for quite a while. And the community was not very pleased because Hut 8, their management, was not really doing anything to kind of correct the record, especially because they were mid-merger and, you know, having that misconception potentially of, hey, we might be getting 122,000 S19 Pros. Look at us. Like, they didn't really, the way I perceived it, had a good vested interest in correcting that record, because the way the community and their shareholders were looking at it was, hey, this is a boon for us. And so that's kind of my take, is that they didn't clean up the record. It very frustrated Celsius creditors because they were basically being like, hey, you're not buying our assets. You're getting management rights, and we're literally paying you to manage. You're not buying us. You know, it was a completely different contextual understanding between Celsius creditors and shareholders that we were seeing for Hut 8. And so the community wasn't very pleased with that. And then just kind of it's continued to kind of be a snowball effect where there's a lot of people still not pleased with the way that certain things are being presented. For example, the other day when the completion of the Chapter 11 for Celsius, they basically made it appear that they were getting 12 exahashes of current hashing capacity, 300 megawatts of energy capacity online right away under management. And I was like, I put a correction on them. I was like, you're getting up to 12 exahashes of capacity and up to 300 megawatts of energy. You currently have about 7 exahashes online with about 6 exahashes sitting in crates in the warehouse. So, I mean, like, it's just, from my perspective, and I see a lot of community frustration mm-hmm. too, is that there's a lot of massaging of critical details to make
things. Oh, I mean, clear. That's welcome to Bitcoin mining, my friend. That is, everyone does that. Yeah. It's bad. It's not good. Yeah. It's not good for shareholders, especially for these public companies now, right? And if you're a Hut 8 shareholder or someone else associated with this, you're probably not looking at this and being like, okay, that's great, because the information's not as accurate as it should be.
Yeah. And what's funny is, on the information's not as accurate as it should be, Hut 8 has a disclaimer in their monthly reports for their Bitcoin mining that says, hey, the numbers won't add up in our monthly report. And I'm just like, then why are we releasing a monthly report if you're self-owned,
hosted. What do they mean by that? Well, like specifically, because that seems like an odd comment to put in a public relations for investors.
Yeah. So the actual quote is, the management service figures reflected in this table included the self-mining hosted metrics from the sites where Hut 8 manages services businesses in addition to services layers in operations of the site, blah, 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 blah. Total energy capacity under management, total deployed miners under management, and total hash rate under management figures are not reflected in this table. And basically goes on to say, like, they're not going to add up. And I'm just like, and that's bullet point 8 on the December and January, if anyone mm-hmm. wants to look at that. That's bullet point number 8 under their notes section. So if anyone wants to cross-reference my comments, feel free. But I always found it was a head-scratch. I'm like, why are we releasing a monthly report to show our metrics and to show your metrics per site and per contract basis, but then they don't add up accurately?
It's, yeah.
It's never been helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could say in their defense, this is a common case in all Bitcoin mining companies. I think it's just the fact that a lot of these companies don't have a lot of staff on hand. I mean, they are publicly listed, but they typically don't have the staff. And then there's also, in nefarious cases, there are people trying to be misleading, but I think it's also, there's not a lot of standardization within Bitcoin yeah. mining.
But I know that they use, I know that most of these miners use dashboards and they use asset Definitely. Tracking software. And so I know that they can see it. I mean, I've looked at some of the dashboards that these different companies use. Like, I find it a little bit disingenuous that yeah. companies would say they don't quite know what they got when most of the dashboards, especially the big ones coming from, like, say, like Brain and stuff like that, you know, yeah. I know that they can tear into these metrics and be like, we've got we got everything that we want.
Definitely so. Is there, which go to the Marathon deal that we hinted at earlier. So yeah, as of like yesterday, I believe it was, Marathon Digital announced that they had essentially come to an agreement with US Bitcoin for US Bitcoin not to be operating the Kearney site and the Granbury site that yep. Marathon Digital purchased from the creditor of the Compute North Chapter 11 case, which was Generate Capital. Generate Capital had appointed US Bitcoin, or correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm not correcting. I'm just all the different names. I'm just like shaking my head at like the layers upon layers upon
the layers. Is onion. Yeah, just to keep going there, Generate Capital came in. They were the big backer behind Compute North, which Compute North went under, I believe, sometime in 2021 or 2022.
Yep.
US Bitcoin won the bid essentially to operate all these sites on behalf of Generate. Generate is a credit and lending group. They have no interest in running a Bitcoin mining site. So US Bitcoin got in there. US Bitcoin was running all these sites. Marathon Digital went and purchased these sites from Generate, and now they want to operate them themselves. Why does this matter for US Bitcoin and for Celsius holders and for Hut 8? I think it just comes down to revenue, right? Operations is a large stream of revenue. And if you lose that in one swift move.
So looking at the S4 merger documents for USBTC and Hut 8, USBTC was basically generating roughly 20-25% of their net revenue at the time of that filing from hosting and management. They had something like, it was 82,160,000 at the time for the year end on this their S4, and basically 16.4 million and 7.5 million respectively was just from their hosting and management side. So I mean, like, a good sizable portion was coming from that. And the problem with that, and I will share another spreadsheet here. So this was a December table that I just kind of corrected to reflect the post-April changes. And we can see before, you know, they had a total energy capacity of 839 megawatts. And you can see two of the big sites, Jirly and Delta, accounted for 400 megawatts of that capacity. So that was basically roughly 110,000 miners that I'm in Celsius so much, I tend to average out at S19 Pro 3250 watts per asset to kind of give my baselines, if that makes sense. So just for anyone who's looking at the numbers and goes, "Huh, that doesn't add up to what those were hosted," like, I have data on one asset type because that is 90% of what this company's working with. So I use that to kind of do my averages. But post April, they're going to be down to 439 megawatts, and they've basically lost all of their hosting and management. But what didn't change, or what did change, is 300 of that is going to be Celsius energy. So what's going to happen in April is you're going to see Charlie Delta fall off the table, and it's going to be basically all of the Celsius place plus Cedarville, which is going to make up, you know, 300 megawatts of their managed. So it's a loss for them, but like, it kind of balances the scales a little bit. If anything, I think they're going to be slightly better off, because averaging out their breakup fee per month, it looks like they're making somewhere around like $4 million a month in management fees for these sites, and Celsius is going to pay them $5 million.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's the good thing, where you get an asset off your hands so you can focus on other core parts of your business. So that's happened many times in Bitcoin mining, where you go out and you purchase too much, and you underestimate how hard it is to get units on rack. So
the problem for Celsius, so this is where it comes kind of in with Celsius creators, is USBTC site Delta offered and contractually signed back last year to host 20,000 ASICs for Celsius. They've now lost that opportunity because obviously the sites have been sold, and Marathon's like, "We need you to vacate our facilities so we can actually host our own assets." So they don't have to obligate, like, Marathon's under no obligation to follow that contract. I mean, they bought an entire facility. I mean, it's theirs now. So they're under no obligations to follow that. And I doubt they're going to follow it because they have S21s coming in. And I expect that they'd want S21s generating 100% revenue for them versus S19J Pros generating sub 30% for them.
Yeah.
So
expect more contract talk is what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah.
More news about that in the next few weeks, probably.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem for creditors for Celsius is, I mean, that drops them down to, so I track a lot of their contracts throughout the entire case, and they were at a little over 90,000 slots under contract total. So their cell phone plus their contractual hosted agreements put them a bit over 90,000, but they only have 70,000 now, and they have 127,000 rigs. So gotcha. They're going to be struggling, and they only have 68,301 as of December actually energized. So it's going to get rough. I know I post on my Twitter for those who follow or want to follow. The community has basically determined what the Celsius mining wallet potentially is. And we also know with a strong degree, based on their metrics, their reports, their daily mined averages, we're pretty strong on this is their wallet, and it's showing that really only about 40,000 rigs are actually mining at any given time. So their uptime percent is still not great.
Okay. Dang. Okay. So not a great picture to end the show on, but where do you think things go from here as we kind of close out? Cause we got to like sort of the end of the saga, this most recent information from recording time on Friday, February 2nd here.
Absolutely. So I've had the opportunity, thankfully, to talk with Matt, and I'm going to butcher his last name again, Prasad, which is the new CEO coming in for Celsius's mining business, which is now called Ionic Digital.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of speaking with him last night for about half an hour on Twitter in private. And he understands the problem, especially in terms of like community sentiment, where the creditors are at and what they're expecting. And what the creditors are expecting is a clear understanding of what is actually happening with the business. So clear metrics, you know, monthly updates, you know, stopping all the puffery, we're going to see how this goes. I provided him a template with, you know, different ways of reporting the metrics. You know, what he might use and what he might not use will be up to them. But I think what Iconic Digital really needs to focus on is business fundamentals. They need to work on lean processes, and a lot of just take it back down to the roots. I know a lot of people in Bitcoin, especially during the bulls, they would rather throw money at a problem than fix a problem. And in order for Celsius, especially being so far behind, and their fleet sounds great at 127,000, you know, ASICs, but at 12 exahashes a second, that puts them at the bottom of the pack in comparison to everyone else who's buying S21s on the road to, you know, 50, 60, 70 exahashes. I mean, like,
joules per terahash, right? Like, you want to be closer to that 17 joules per terahash S21s are at, as opposed to.
Yeah.
You're up to 30, 35 joules per terahash for a lot of these units.
And Celsius is sitting at the 30 joules per terahash. I mean, they're not running a modern fleet. They were good during the last cycle, but the joules per terahash, I mean, has just plummeted. Yeah. And so, I mean, you've got to... Their financial situation is tight. No matter how you look at it, I mean, they have $225 million in capitalization with no debt. Air quotes on that. But $225 million goes fast when you've already basically scheduled buildouts for Cedarvale that cost $120 million for year one and basically another $120 for year two. I mean, like, your capital is basically spent in all but actuality. So, I mean, they need to work on running a lean business. They need to work on streamlining contracts, boosting their efficiency rates, and just really narrowing down on what their problems are and how to fix those without spending an inordinate amount of money. So that's a leadership. That's going to be a leadership problem. I mean, that's not the rank and file really can't fix that. The leadership needs to do, you know, proper analysis work on their business and fix the problems. And you know, we'll see if they have that capability. I don't see any of them with any backgrounds or experiences with like Lean Six Sigma or any of like the other business professional analysis methods. So, I mean, we shall see how they do, but I think they need to go back down to roots. In the end of the day, Bitcoin mining, as much as people hate to hear it, is basically just a manufacturing business. You have inputs and outputs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to make sure that your inputs don't, you know, cause any issues to your outputs. And I mean, it's basically business fundamentals 101 that they need to get back to.
Yeah.
If they can do that, I mean, they can run a lean, you know, low cost, high margin business. I mean, they have the assets to be successful. It's just going to be a matter of tightening the belt and getting it done.
Keith, that was great. Thank you for joining the show today. Where can people find out more about yourself or keep up to date with your work or get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I mean, everything, I primarily post everything on my Twitter, which is kindly put in parentheses. That's ChazOnKE on Twitter. I post short form and long form tweets. So if anyone wants to check that out, that's primarily way. If you want to message me, you'll need to at me and then be like, hey, I want to chat. Because I the amount of people that have sent less than pleasant things over the course of this this bankruptcy proceeding has made me not keep my DMs open.
Cool. We'll talk again with you soon here, I'm sure. If you enjoyed the show, thanks for listening and give us a like, subscription on our YouTube channel, or give us a 5-star rating on Spotify, wherever else you listen to the show. Okay. Keith, talk to you again soon here.
Thank you very much. You have a good one.